What then must we do? Straight talk about the next American Revolution, democratizing wealth and building a community-sustaining economy from the ground up, by Garl Pervitz. Introduction, What Then Must We Do? I've borrowed my title, What Then Must We Do, from Tolstoy, and the profoundly disturbing 1886 book he wrote once he began to dig below the surface of what was happening in late 19th century Russia, a time when the system was in decay, the aristocracy enjoyed extraordinary luxury, and the peasants endured lives of hunger and pain. As a person of privilege, he began to understand something deeper about his time in history. I sit on a man's back, choking him and making him carry me, he wrote, and yet assure myself and others that I am very sorry for him and wish to ease his lot by all possible means, except by getting off his back. Most of us do not literally sit on men's backs, making them carry us. We do, however, often uneasily look the other way, satisfying ourselves with modest changes that reassure us all is well while millions are in despair. We've done the best we can do, we might say, given the realities. Still, many sense, as did Tolstoy, that to actually do something serious would require us to confront much deeper problems than we are commonly willing to. What then must we do is not shouted in the streets, but it is a question that more and more Americans, young and old, liberal, radical, and conservative, are quietly beginning to ask themselves in much more penetrating ways. So let us begin. My starting point is the obvious fact that despite its great wealth, the United States today faces enormous difficulties, with no easily discernible political answers that even begin to offer strategic handholds on a truly democratic future. Elections occur, and major fiscal debates ensue, but many of the most pressing problems facing ordinary citizens are only marginally affected, and in many cases, in ways that increase burdens, not reduce them. The issue is not simply that our situation is worrisome, however, it is that there are growing reasons to believe that in fact we face systemic problems, not simply political problems. Systemic problems in the fundamental, not the superficial sense. In the pages ahead, I will suggest that our nation's truly critical problems are built into the very structure of the economic and political system. They are not something passing in the night that will go away even when we elect forward-looking leaders and actively pressure them to move in a different direction. I won't load you down with statistics at this point. I'll provide many more details in due course. A couple of obvious reminders, however. Not only has the economy been stagnating for a long time, but for the average person and the average family, things have been bad for a very long time. Real wages for 80% of American workers, for instance, have not gone up more than a trivial amount for at least three decades. At the same time, for the top 1%, has jumped from roughly 10% of all income to roughly 20%. Put another way, virtually all the gains of the entire economic system have gone to a tiny, tiny group at the top for at least three decades. Worth pausing to think about that one. What is going on when virtually all the gains in the entire economic system go to the top? I'm not interested here in criticizing those at the top. We can deal with that later. The question is, what is going on with the system when this kind of thing happens and continues to happen in an ongoing way, year by year, decade by decade over time? Another reminder, almost 50 million Americans live in officially defined poverty. The rate is higher, not lower, than in the late 1960s, another disturbing trend marker. Moreover, if we use the measuring standard common throughout the advanced world, which considers the poverty level to be half the median income level, the number would be just under 70 million, and the rate is almost 23%. This is to say nothing of steady increases in global warming and an unemployment rate that, if properly measured, is stuck in the range of roughly 15%. At the most superficial level, Washington, as the saying goes, is broken. Give or take an occasional gain in selected areas, the political system is incapable of dealing with deeper challenges. It focuses on deficits, not answers. Long trends that don't change are a clear signal that it's not simply the modern period of partisan bickering and congressional stalemate that is causing the problems. The trends were moving steadily downward long before the Tea Party and the recent partisan foolishness, long before the Citizens United Supreme Court decision allowed corporations to put big money directly into politics, and long before many events that have been heralded as tipping points of one kind or another. Nor are people stupid. More and more have a sense that something different is going on, both with the economy and, more fundamentally, with democracy itself. A few more bits of information, just as reminders, again, of something we are all beginning to sense. A mid-2011 poll found that roughly 80% of Americans believe their congressional representatives to be more interested in serving the needs of special interest groups than the people they represent. Another poll found that almost 4 out of 5 believe a few rich people and corporations have too much power. And only 37%, not much more than a third of the population, have confidence in the most solemn and august of American institutions, the Supreme Court. I'm going to dig much, much deeper into all of this, of course, but for now let's leave it at this. When critical, long trends do not improve, when they steadily get worse, year in and year out, it is clear that we face deeply rooted, systemic problems, not simply political problems in the usual sense of the term. Moreover, as those polls suggest, people increasingly understand that something is really, really wrong. The question is, how do we deal with a systemic crisis, something built into the way the political-economic world works, rather than a simple political crisis or economic crisis? How do we really confront that question squarely? The traditional, very general answer has been to organize a movement to build political power and pressure leaders to act, and I certainly agree that this is necessary, but urging this in general terms is hardly a strategy, much less, if taken seriously, an answer to the question of how serious trend-shifting change can be achieved. Rather, it is a general call to arms with little more in deeper strategic understanding than a recognition that we had better begin, somehow, to act or we are in trouble. But not, for most people, more than that. No, a serious answer demands both a call to arms and a clear strategy. This book does not claim to answer every question. It will, however, urge an explicit strategy, one that I hope is sufficiently well-developed that at least a beginning answer to the question, what then must we do, will be on the table, one that I hope may be improved by ongoing debate and dialogue as we go forward. It will also suggest that our emerging historical context is both radically different from that of the Great Depression and New Deal era, and different, too, from the post-war boom era of progressive change, which means that it may now be possible to develop very different organizing and system-changing strategies than many have thought seriously about in recent years. For this reason, I'm going to put off for just a bit some traditional questions of political tactics, organizing, and even vague rhetorical calls for revolution. We'll get back to them after we have dealt with the system-related issues and the question of what the unusual nature of the emerging historical context might make possible. Finally, by the way, as a historian and political economist, it is obvious to me that difficult historical times do not always or even commonly persist forever. In my judgment, "We shall overcome" is not simply a slogan, but in fact the likely, though not inevitable, outcome of the long struggle ahead. It is possible, quite simply, that we may lay the groundwork for a truly American form of community-sustaining and wealth-democratizing transformative change, and thereby also the reconstitution of genuine democracy, step by step, from the ground up.